Hi, everybody. Welcome to podcast number 29 of the Alexis L podcast. This is an easygoing, cattle loping, sugarfoot kind of a. You'd have to be like really old to remember what the fuck that was.
Well, yeah, what the fuck are you talking about? Cattle loping. What's cattle loping?
That was a. Oh, there was a. In the 1960s, I think, there was a black and white Western TV series shown on. Granada Television, I think, up north, called, I think it was called Sugarfoot. Warner Brothers used to make the, had a huge stable of kind of half hour westerns that they made. Maverick was one. There was one that starred Clint Eastwood, Rawhide, Have Gun Will Travel, and Sugarfoot. And it was the theme song went something like, I think, easy loping cattle roping Sugarfoot. I think his kind of USP, his particular thing was that he was quite gentle. That's why he was called Sugarfoot, I think. He was less macho than... if you got a book there, you're looking it up.
Well, that's funny because I was just reading about... I was just reading a Alan Moore graphic novel.
Oh, right.
The last League of Extraordinary Gentlemen book. And at the beginning of each kind of chapter, they write a passage about in kind of memory of a graphic a comic book artist.
All right.
Of the past. And one of the ones they mentioned, and they're all British, by the way.
Yeah.
One of the ones they mentioned, maybe Dennis McLaughlin,
right,
was like obsessed with these Western series,
right, okay,
from America,
yeah,
and wrote and drew a lot of British comic books about cowboys and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it was Dennis McLaughlin. Buffalo Bill, Wild West, shit like that. So it's funny how...
I remember that one, but yeah.
There's an obsession in the UK around that time about cowboys and stuff. Like, it wasn't just in America, the fan base. They were
You know, yeah. There was, I guess they had a big impact. There was also that thing, which, you know, that a lot of the British series, like Robin Hood and William Tell and stuff, that they were actually, a lot of them were written by communists who'd fled from the McCarthyite purges in Hollywood in the 50s. So if you look at certain episodes of William Tell, you know, they're called like dialectical and historical materialism. But they actually do contain subtle kind of communist Marxist messages, if you
With Robin Hood, it's not so subtle, though, is it?
Well, no, exactly, yeah, yeah.
He invented
kind of
the
proto-bandit, yeah.
Eat the rich.
Yeah, yeah.
And nowadays, all the Robin Hood films are all American productions, even though they obviously have to cast Brits in the roles. And the last one was made by Guy Ritchie, wasn't it? I did some ADR in that one.
You what?
I did some ADR in that Robin Hood film.
Okay.
Because it starts in the Crusades in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Where Robin Hood gets all his training. And I voiced a bunch of Arabs being shot with arrows and stuff.
You know, I can't watch it. I said this before. I can't watch a film set in the Middle East now, because I was thinking, you know, it's like that. I was watching that chase scene in the Third Bourne film, you know, which is in Tangier, I think.
Yeah.
And then I just heard you going, you know.
How did you know my line?
I didn't know. Yeah.
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 Me or one of my cohorts. Yeah. I know. Well, I can't watch any film without picking apart the sound design, because if it's a good film, they do it so well. So for the listener, ADR is when, because, you know, on a film set, like a big action set piece or any scene really set outdoors, they have hundreds of extras sometimes scattered around the shot. And you can't record all their audio on the day. In fact, in order to get the clean audio of the main actors, what you do is you tell all the extras in the background just to mime talking. Don't actually make any noise, because the lead actors, we want to get their audio clean. And so what they do is, in post-production, normally in a studio in Soho, they'll bring in loop groups, you know, 10, you know, anywhere between 5 and 15 actors come into a room. And then we dub all the voices for all the people in the background.
Yeah.
And
basically any movie in the last 20 years that was set in the Middle East or TV show, I'm probably somewhere buried in the background muttering some stuff and or saying, you know, Death to America in the early days. I did a lot of that shit.
Yeah.
Filthy American pig dog. Blah! Gah! Lots of those noises.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's all done in London, no matter where the film is shot. But nowadays, nowadays I do a lot more than just Arab stuff. I do because pretty soon, eventually my agent realized that this is my natural accent. She's like, oh, you speak English normally. I'm like, yeah. Okay, let's get you in for a silent witness and see how you do and, you know, stuff like that.
That's a little glimpse behind the curtain for you there, people. See how shit gets made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my bread and butter, voicing angry Arabs in the background. And actually, I'm thinking of starting a new podcast eventually when I get around to it. I want to do a show where every episode I basically dissect a film that has Arabic characters in it, a film or TV show or book or whatever, and kind of and dissect how we are represented in that
thing. Always well and fairly, I think.
There's a brilliant documentary film which is based on his book. I think his name is Michael Shaheen. Oh shit, I wish I could remember his name. I'll look it up. But the film is called Real Bad Arabs, and Real is spelt R-E-E-L.
All right.
And it's a history of Arabs represented in Hollywood. And it's a professor of film who made the film, and he is based on one of his essays.
Because in that, I don't suppose it's changed, but you know, in the Indiana Jones I was in, of course, the Arabs played by a fucking Welsh guy.
And you.
And yes, and me. That's true. Here's me railing against miscasting of Arabs, and I'm one of them. That's true. You're right.
And I want to have a guest on each episode. And so on the Indiana Jones episode, I think I would ask you to be my guest, and we'll basically and dissect it. And then Omid Jalili in for the Mummy episode.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really cool, interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Yeah.
Analysis of Hollywood representation, how history and whole cultures get distorted through the lens of a fucking...
Yeah, well, of course, when we were rhapsodizing kind of nostalgically about Westerns, but, I mean, all those Westerns are about legitimizing genocide, aren't they, really? I mean, that's what a lot of them are about.
That's all been washed out these days. They hardly ever have cover that issue of, like, cowboys and Indians, like... kind of thing.
Well, unless, I mean, they have to acknowledge that. But I mean, if you think that those films are propaganda, they're partly about, you know, legitimating the
cleaning up the savage United States.
Yeah, yeah, all that, you know, a lot of that.
John Wayne.
That's amazing, wasn't it, actually, that they made that, a fucking Lone Ranger that they made with Arnie Hammer and Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm.
Which wasn't that long ago, with Johnny Depp with that bird on his head,
mm-hmm.
playing a Native American.
Tonto?
Tonto, playing Tonto, yeah. It was extraordinary that got made, really. At least it was a tremendous
Johnny Depp flop. Has got like 1/8 Cherokee blood or something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
I thought the set pieces in that film were really good. The action set pieces looked incredible. But the whole idea of the film existing is questionable, you know.
I think it was highly questionable.
But you know, there was
Arnie Hammer fallen prey to some.
He's a cannibal, isn't he?
Meat. Is he?
Well, why he's cancelled now.
Really?
Do you not know about this?
No, I just saw that he'd been cancelled.
Yeah, so like he
left. Oh well, yeah, I don't like that word cancelled, but I mean he'd been, you know.
He left some voicemails for a girl he was courting. A lady he was courting. Yeah. Just, you know, casually talking about how he wants to bring her back to his house and, like, eat her fingers and drink her blood and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then she leaked the audio.
Yeah.
And then he was blacklisted after that.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Why? Have you ever dabbled in cannibalism?
What?
Have you ever dabbled in cannibalism?
No, not really. What's not? What's in it for the cannibalee, as it were? What's in it for the? I see what's in it for the eater, but I can't see what's in it for the ete, really.
Well, I guess it's a masochistic impulse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't really see the benefit of being in that position.
Not really.
Do you think any cows out there are getting kicks out of watching us eating steaks and stuff? Alexi, you've been very busy lately, haven't you?
I have.
A really nice tweet I read by Miss Dayglow. And she said she was bowled over by Alexis Sale at the BBC this evening, recording a couple episodes of his imaginary sandwich bar radio show. Not sure how much of his political commentary will make the final cut, but he's as sharp and funny as ever.
That was last night when we're recording this. Mistake was in there. I think she, the BBC are very. I think all the political content will stay in. We don't generally record it unless it's already been.
Well, we were just discussing before recording this that they basically they don't cut shit out after you've recorded. They edit your script.
No. Well, they don't edit the script. They just say, you know, we think we'll have a problem with this. What do you have a workaround, or you know, what do you think really? So they don't tell me to do anything, but you know, and there's certain ditches I'll die. You know, there's certain matters I'll make a stand, and there's others where I think, well, yeah, you know, I can see, I can see your point really. I think what will go out will be pretty inflammatory, you know, will set some feathers a jangling or whatever.
Has it ever been floated, the idea ever been floated to make Sandwich Bar a TV program?
No, not really. No. I mean, it. No.
What if you were to create a TV program today? And you had all ultimate control over what.
Yeah.
What would you really like to see on telly?
I would like to do before I die. I would like to make a big budget kind of Netflixy series set around the world, multiple locations that nobody watched, but at least I'd, you know, which, and there have been many of those.
Like a drama.
I would think a comedy drama. I think I'd really like to write and be executive producer on a big budget one of them things that nobody ever sees, you know, on Sky or Apple or
Apple
something.
Apple TV, yeah.
Apple
Sounds
TV,
like an
something
Apple
like
TV
that.
Show.
Yeah, that's what I would really like to do. I don't really have much, really anything to do with television these days. So, but I think that's where I would like to. That's where I'd like to do something, really, rather than terrestrial.
What about a TV series about a backpacker, like on their gap year or something that goes.
Well, no. What's that got to do with me?
Well, then they'd be traveling.
I would see around the world. Yeah. I really like them. Well, no, there's a sort of series. There's a type of series, isn't there? Where there was one called Sense8, which I think was an early one for Amazon. And it was like one character was like Japanese and another one drove like a minibus in Ghana. And it was really interesting until they started getting their fucking superpowers and then it just became boring.
Ah.
But when it was just set around the world, it was really fascinating. I'd love to do something like that, the set in kind of multiple countries. And it would also appeal to if anybody out there is listening from it, you know, it would also appeal to multiple markets.
Yeah.
Which is a big driver for those platforms.
It's a logistical and budgetary nightmare, really, having film crews and film departments in different parts of the world. And
it's only a problem if you don't have the money. It's solvable if you've got.
What are you watching at the moment? What are you?
What am I watching at the moment?
Yeah, current shows.
I'm watching. I'm watching House of the Dragon.
Me too. I was hoping you'd say that.
Okay. I mean, it's not. Compared to the fucking Lord of the Rings one, I know Lenny's in Lord of the Rings, so I don't want to criticize it too heavily, but
he's the best part of that show.
He's best. Yeah, it's fucking shocking bad.
It's kind of boring.
It's really awful. And just a waste of money is staggering. Yeah, the cost, you can see the money on the screen, but it's
ridiculous. Yeah. And then they just let the shots go on too long. It's like there'll be a 30-second shot of a boat just slowly creeping down the river. I'm like, okay, like I know, I get that you spent £2 million on this shot, but it's not telling me any story right now. Can you cut to the next scene, please?
Yeah, but whereas House of the Dragon is, I don't think it's Game of Thrones, but it's kind of watchable, you know. It was very dark, wasn't it, this week's?
Yes.
Episode directed by Miguel Sapochnik, whose parents are a friend of my friend Oscar's. Argentinian refugees.
Oscar Zapata.
Zarate.
I always get
Zarate.
But it's just funny that they've both come out at the same time and they're kind of both fantasy shows, and it's just showing how one's showing you how to do it and the other one is showing you how not.
I mean, the main failure, as other people have said about House of the Dragon, is it just can't. Whereas, you know, the Game of Thrones, you know, had multiple storylines.
There was much more going on.
Across the class divide, you know, in Fleabottom and in, you know, King's Landing and, you know, the high and the low, whereas this concentrates entirely on the upper classes. And I don't know whether, and because I know they made several pilots, didn't it, that they junked at the cost of hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know whether that's clearly a decision that they made to just concentrate on the shenanigans of the ruling class. And I don't know whether that's about the age we live in, where, you know, it's that's what's considered interesting is that, you know, the goings on in a ruling cast, or whether it's, you know, I don't know what the decision was. I will also just I auditioned a couple of times for Game of Thrones.
Is it? Oh wow.
You know, there's a thing now with actors where, you know, you have to self-tape. You have to, because they say, well, we'd love to have you, but we have to send this tape.
Self-taping is the worst thing.
We won't get into it too much in this, but it's a major bad thing that's happened to the acting business in the last 10 years, really. And then they say, can you just do like self-tape? And so I'm in such a bad mood when I do the self-tape that the people in LA look at it and go, fuck, we're not having him.
Yeah.
So I just won't do them anymore.
And for some reason, I'm just more relaxed in the room with people than I am at home. When I'm at home doing it, I feel tense and awful, and I hate doing it. And you have to direct yourself. Anyway,
this is like a conversation at the Groucho Club, isn't it?
Very elitist. But a couple points of what you were saying about House of Dragon. Game of Thrones had a richer source material because it was based on books that were thicker than a double-decker bus, you know, like they so they had all those stories ready to go. That's why I think they had so many storylines, Game of Thrones. But also complaining that there aren't enough storylines in House of the Dragon is being written specifically for the TV show, so they don't have as rich a source material. But most TV shows are just about one family or one storyline. So like we've raised set the bar a bit high. But my main complaint about House of Dragons is that, because I've really, really, really enjoyed it, but it is, the central theme of it is about two women who hate each other. And that's
right.
That's kind of something my girlfriend pointed out, but I had to agree.
It's
okay, so you've made a show about women, which is great, but why do they have to hate each other? Like, what's
good point? Should we go on to our last analysis of our last podcast now? How do you feel that went down? I mean, I was hoping that would go out talking about the ideas of Ocalan and Murray Bookchin, and everybody people would in their millions would say, yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, it would start a revolution. I don't think that quite happened, has it? But you said you've had some nice feedback about that.
We certainly have. But don't beat yourself up, Alexei, about we haven't started a revolution yet, because
as discussed in the episode itself, yeah, these ideas need time to become normalized. And because right now, most people don't see an alternative to our,
yeah,
to our system, our electoral system, our governmental system. And we have to make the idea of anarchism acceptable. I after that episode, I spoke to some friends of mine, and they were still being stubbornly like, it's just not applicable. It's just not realistic. How would it work? And it's like, it's only not realistic because we haven't considered it. Like, how many, you know, how much time have you given to even considering how this works? Spending time with your peers in the community, talking about a better way.
Yeah.
And a revolution occurring without a replacement system ready to go will create a fucking power vacuum, and we'll end up with a tyrant or just the same shit all over again. So
yeah, maybe.
Don't.
Another thing I thought is just slightly off, rather than reversing, you know, with I had this idea that we would take over the Monster Over the Looney Party. Maybe we could just, yeah, you know, because the most popular party in Britain, as it were, is the I Didn't Vote party, isn't it? There's most people don't vote or. No, I don't know if it's a majority, but there's an awful lot of people who don't vote.
Yes.
So maybe we could have a party where you could just vote for, like, call it the protest party. And you could just vote for the protest party. And, like, we wouldn't take our seats. We'd be like Sinn Féin at Westminster. We wouldn't take our seats.
So rather than actually abstaining, set up a party that's called abstain.
The protest party. Abstain. Yeah.
And then.
That'd be good. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We should come up for with a anagram. Is it an anagram? No, anacrim for abstain, like,
yeah,
always.
My mind's gone blank now. Yeah,
always be serving.
Well, no, I don't think together. You just say like the protest party or
independent,
you know. So, the protest party, so we'd put up, maybe I'll do this, I'll finance some by election or something. I'll finance, so I'll stand, or we'll put up like you can stand.
Thanks, I'll and, do one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we need multiple constituencies.
If you're pissed off, yeah, vote for the protest party.
Yeah.
Or abstain. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we won't, you know, you'll register your disgust with the electoral system because obviously, you know, so many decent people have been locked out of the Labour Party now, for example. So you'll register your disgust. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, and it'll make a powerful and be like, you know, the political commentators will be like, what the, you know, or they'll ignore it, or they'll be like, oh, you know, first in Ian Duncan Smith's constituency is like Ian Duncan Smith, and then second is some slimy Labour bastard. But third is, what's this? Protest Talal Karkuti at the protest party. What's this all about? And we won't take our seats. You know, we'll swear not to, or have any policies at all.
Yeah. And just all our efforts on educating and setting up, you know, discussion groups and educating people on an alternative way of doing it, of doing
government. No, I don't. Well, maybe. Or maybe preparing we'll do nothing at all. We'll do nothing at all. The protest party will guarantee that it will do nothing at all.
No, we can't do that. This isn't our Patreon page.
No.
We can't do that. You've got to...
You're seeing it. This is a different thing. You're seeing it in the wrong way.
Am I?
I think the protest party was just... You were rich. And then so you can attract the right as well as the left. If you're pissed off from a right-wing point of view...
Mm.
You can vote, but don't feel yourself represented by the electoral system. You can vote for the protest party.
Mm.
If you're left-wing and don't feel represented, you vote for the protest party. We guarantee we will have no policies apart from registering your vote. I think that's an interesting idea. We will do nothing. We will do – that's to be our slogan. We will do absolutely nothing.
Is the end game here – the aim is to end up with a government whose mandate is like 5% of the population, and then finally being able to stand up.
I don't know what
you have. No authority here. Fuck
off. This is a separate idea from what we were talking about before with Rojava and anarchism. Let's ignore that for the moment. This is just a kind of a Dadaist idea.
Yeah.
To insert a kind of. A kind of Dadaist kind of situation.
Well, if you want to go full Dada, reality,
yeah,
then instead of not showing up to Parliament, we put in our seats like mannequins or like kettles.
Yeah. Crash Test Dummy or
a fridge and stuff like that.
Or Wilf. Yeah, my cat.
Just random objects in the seats in Parliament.
That'd be good. Yeah.
And so everyone around the world watches PMQs and they just see.
See, like,
oh, there's a coffee grinder sitting in for
Senor Coffee Grinder, yeah.
And who's that in the Winchester?
All right, no, I'm excited by this. All right, so I've got, you know, maybe we'll, how much it costs? It's only like, what's the deposit? It's like 500 quid or something. I could afford that.
Because we've seen everything. Somebody, we've seen like Theresa May standing next to Count Binface when they're calling out the results, but we haven't seen her standing next to a lamp shade. Or, you know, some potpourri.
So this would be specifically, it'd be called the protest party or it'd be called abstain, yeah.
But
see what the listeners think.
So this is a pointless exercise, but like intentionally.
Changing the direction of the conversation. I think it would fit in with the kind of situationist.
You
know, those Marxist realists.
The government.
Showing the true farce of our... Yes. Of our fake democracy.
Until finally no one takes it seriously and begs for an alternative.
Exactly. There you go. All right. So if anybody's interested, I will, I'll finance them to stand in.
You'll finance them?
Yeah.
Okay. This is our new asking for a friend, because that's kind of fizzled out, to be honest, the emails.
Yeah.
We're going to ask for candidates. We should do that. Email him, alexisalepodcast@gmail.com.
See what you feel about this, yeah.
Send
us. I say anybody event. It's very. I think it's very important that it's ecumenical. So I think that's the right word. Well, I think it has to mean that it's, has to be, it has to be, go from left to right. Anybody can and should vote for the protest party.
But what do we want them to email in? Maybe like a profile?
Well, just whether they think it's a good idea, you know, whether they're prepared to stand, whether they're prepared to found their local branch of the protest party. I don't know.
If you want to stand, we want to know which constituency you want to stand in.
Yeah.
The name you're going to use. It doesn't have to be your own name. And what physical random object is going to sit in your seat in Parliament. And just a couple policies to go in the manifesto.
No policies. Policies. No, you're not getting it again. There's got no policies at all. We will have no policies on anything.
Okay. Yeah. All right, no policies.
None.
Yeah, this is the anti-monster raving loony party.
I don't know.
The same, but different.
Yeah.
Because they have policies, but their policies are nonsensical.
Right.
We
will have
that.
No policies.
Yeah.
We have no policies on anything.
Okay.
All right. Send
us in your
out. Yeah.
Your applications then for that.
Yeah.
To alexisalepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
I think the Rojava episode got some really great feedback in terms of listener numbers. Very average, it's not been a dud. It's got the same listenership as most of our other episodes.
All right.
Okay, it's not beaten Stuart Lee. Stuart Lee is the top of the chart at the moment. That's like ridiculous. I don't know why he's so popular and Omar Jalili didn't reach those mountainous heights.
People who listen to, I think. Yeah, it's our listenership, isn't it, really?
Finally, I'm going to see Stuart Lee tonight at the Leicester Square.
Oh, it's tonight, is it?
Yeah.
It's it's like a kind of work in progress, isn't it?
I guess, yeah. Leicester Square Theatre is kind of his residency, isn't it?
But, yeah.
The show's called Basically.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Mm.
Apparently he's injured. He's got he's broken his ankle, so I wish him...
Is he?
Yeah, I wish him a quick recovery. But yes, so listenership on Rojava and on Ugly Bridgerton were not disappointing.
Okay, good.
Okay, and do you want to hear some emails about Rojava?
Oh, that's good. Right, so we're sort of level. We have a level of listenership that doesn't go up, doesn't go down, really.
Yeah, around the 15,000 mark. So please, actually, seeing as we're on the point, look, as we've mentioned so many times on this show, yes, Alexi is a big, famous, rich Hollywood star, but this show doesn't have Universal Studios budget. This is a grassroots show. We completely rely on the Patreon funds to make this show happen and on your word of mouth. We don't have any marketing budget. So, like, if you like the show, it's really helpful. I hate doing these call to actions, so I'll make it quick. Whatever app you use to listen to this show, leave a review on it and give it a 5-star rating and write a few lines for a review. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment and tell your friends about the show. Get them to listen to it too. Get them to leave reviews. That shit really helps the algorithm. We don't get featured on the Apple Podcast app like a lot of these, you know, bigger podcasts like fucking James Acaster and all that shit. They are on the front page of the app. You open the app and they shove that shit down your throat. You got to look for the Alexis L podcast to listen to
bastard,
it.
Fuck bastard.
It's all those fuck bastards. Exactly.
Yeah.
So leave us a review, give us 5 stars, write a few lines in the review, and that really helps us in the algorithm and hopefully gets us on the front page of the apps. And in terms of helping fund the show, you know what to do. If you really want to help and you have some spare change, go to the Patreon, patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast and drop us a dime, man. Yeah. Come on, partner. Howdy, partner. Yeah. Mosey on down to our Patreon and throw some pennies our way. It really, really fucking helps. And
Makes means me feel we can better do the show. About myself as well.
And look at Alexi. He's so sad. I wish you could see his face right now. Yeah, help him out, man.
I'm sad. I'd be happy if you gave me some money.
We should do a charity advert, but about you not being able to pay me.
Yeah.
Looking all sad.
But yeah, it's like, well, there's poor Syrian Talal. Talal is forced to do an unpopular podcast. Please send money. He's like Martin Bell. He doesn't know where his next flat is coming from.
It's a great idea.
A new series of Sandwich Bar starts on October 20th, I think it is. It's a Thursday.
Much excite.
Yeah, it is. It will be the last one, as we all recall, trended at number one all day on Twitter. So let's do that again for the new series. I think there is a lot to get your teeth into. It's God bless Radio 4 for letting
God
me do
God bless
it.
Them.
Yeah. Shukran.
I will put them in my prayers this evening.
Yes, and put it out there and on the social medias.
Yes,
it's a series. I must say, I'm really pleased with it. I mean, it's taken me a long. Joe, I was talking about producer before, and he thought I'd been writing it for 18 months. I actually can't remember. I mean, it's always with Sandwich Bar. I can never remember starting writing it. The scripts just appear one day. And I don't know where they've come from, really. But he thought I'd been actually been writing it for like 18 months or something. To write 2 hours of it's amazingly dense, brilliant stand-up comedy is really hard.
Well,
especially when you're 70. but these shows are, each one has a theme. Each one says something powerfully true, I think, about the world we live in today. And some silly stuff as well. There is a Hamilton. I'll just leak it. There is a Hamilton style hip hop musical.
Shut up.
Called Jeremy.
Fuck off! Are you kidding me?
No. Let me talk about. There's 2 minutes of a Hamilton style, beautifully produced and written. Hamilton style hip hop musical, which is, I performed it last night. Well, if that woman was, I danced to it last night as well, which obviously you won't see on the radio, but I did a beautiful interpretive dance to it last night.
Oh, so that's in the last episode?
Might be in the first episode. We don't, we're just.
Alexi, that is amazing. So are you a Hamilton fan? I love Hamilton.
Not really.
No. Have you seen it?
No.
So how do
I like to do.
Write a parody of it.
Well, because I've heard, you know.
You've heard some of the songs.
I've heard some of it, yeah.
Okay.
I like Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah. I was obsessed with Hamilton for a while, and I did something called Talalton. I might have mentioned this on the show before. I did a one-man show version of the whole of Hamilton. I've definitely talked about this on the show. Tarleton. I'll be doing it again. Right. I was raising money for charity. It was my comic relief.
Cool. Well, this is it's written and produced by Tim Sutton, who does my music, and it's fantastic.
Oh,
it's breathtaking.
God. Very exciting to listen to.
So that's in one episode.
Well, I'm very proud of you, Alexi. You've worked so hard.
I've worked unbelievably
hard.
It's
a big part of why we haven't recorded an episode in a while. Like, you've been extremely busy. You're 70 years old.
Yeah.
Pumping out great shit like this. And people are saying you're funnier than you've ever been.
I am.
And congratulations. And I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. I'm proud of myself. I'm a fucking prodigy. I'm a fire starter.
Yeah, twisted.
Crazy fire starter. I'm intensely proud of this series of, you know, it's been, the writing process has been gone on for a long time, and I've done, you know, multiple drafts, and you know, it takes a long time. The way that I do it is that I start out with some material that I've got and some ideas, and then the themes emerge gradually, really. But there's some killer openers. There's a killer opening to what at the moment is show one.
October 20th, BBC Radio October 4. 20th,
Radio 4, yeah, 6:30.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
You still got it, baby.
I don't know
what it is, but you've got it.
Yeah, for the moment. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, Alexi, we keep getting distracted by wonderful and amazing diversions, but...
that's one thing I was going to say. You were talking about this. You always, when you watch a movie, talk about the sound design. Nigel Planer, you know, Neil from The Young Ones, all he talks about is the wigs.
When he watches films.
Yeah, all he sees is wigs. good wigs or bad wigs.
Was Neil's hair a wig?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a really good wig.
It was a good wig, yeah. Yeah. So he's still... And after, do you have some good? What's happening with that? We're working our way towards getting that episode we filmed with Nigel and Lisa, where we watch an episode.
A little update the for the listeners. Will,
yeah.
If you remember, we were asking people to let us know if they were up for kind of recreating episodes 1 and 2 of The Young Ones, and we had some really great responses and people like kind of willing to do it for us because YouTube wasn't letting us use the footage from The Young Ones. So basically we shot, you, Nigel, Lisa, shot a video of you reacting to the first two episodes of The Young Ones. I edited that up into some really great footage, and basically it's a screen and a screen. So we're watching The Young Ones while you guys are watching The Young Ones and you're reacting live to what you're seeing on the screen. And then I tried to upload it to YouTube, and then YouTube said, no, copyright flagged. Don't post this. You'll be banned. Fuck off. You can't do this. BBC turns out are very tight about who can post clips of The Young Ones. And I tried even putting up a minuscule shot, like through 2 seconds of it. And they were like, no, sorry, banned, can't do this, copyright, fuck off. Then I basically did my work. I tried to get in touch with people at BBC. Turns out they were making, there's a Blu-ray coming out very soon, 40th anniversary of The Young Ones.
The anniversary this year, yeah.
And I ended up somehow getting involved in that shit and helping them wrangle you, Lisa and Nigel, to come into a studio and record your own commentaries, which is kind of counterintuitive because that's in direct competition for the shit we spent ages making. However, through all these talks and stuff, I am on the precipice of getting the BBC to give our YouTube channel a free pass on posting Young Ones footage. Once that is done, I can start uploading the episodes we've done. Then we can start doing more of them. So I'm so sorry to have teased you with this since probably like June, May.
Whenever, it was a long time, yeah.
But we haven't stopped thinking about it. We haven't stopped working.
Yeah, yeah. We never stop. We never stop.
We never
all these
stop.
Stupid ideas that we talk about, and you think, are they forgotten about that?
Yeah, no.
Or the every single one of them, every stupid idea that we've ever had, we're working on all of them.
Yes, my hands have been tied. my hands are tied. I'm tied to a chair. My hands behind my back. But I had they didn't see that I had a little sliver of glass up my sleeve, and I've been slowly, sawing away at the rope around my wrists. And any second now, I'm going to break free from these binds and fucking upload this shit onto YouTube for your viewing pleasure.
I want
you and your friends and your parents and your cousins to all watch it.
40th anniversary.
Hopefully we can get it out this year. In the anniversary. I think the anniversary is actually in November or something, right?
Is it?
I don't know.
There you go. Well, maybe we can. Yeah, well, that'd be good.
But it is
anyway.
Coming.
All right. So that's just coming. So now, sorry, I diverted. You wrote Java.
Yeah,
emails
happened again.
Wrote Java. Oh, sorry, I keep diverting. Oh, look, a squirrel.
Where? I love squirrels. okay, here we go.
I hate this T-shirt, by the way, that I'm wearing in the little picture. I look like a fat man.
Black is meant to be slimming.
I just look like a fat old bloke, don't I?
Maybe that's just what you are.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, harsh.
I think you're just big boned, dude.
No, I'm fat. Anyway,
go
on.
You're fit and active. You look fantastic,
I am
Alexi.
Fit. I do. I am very spry, but I could do it losing like 50
me too,
kilos.
Buddy. Me fucking too. Mm.
Anyway, go on. Anyway, sorry. Now
we have an email from New Zealand. Okay. Have you ever been to New Zealand?
Yes.
You have?
I've been to, yes, I did yes, the first time was I don't know whether to get into this now, but you know I've never done a commercial. It's my proud boast that I've never appeared in a commercial. Despite being offered amazing amounts of money. In the early days. I've never appeared in a commercial in the UK I've done one commercial in New Zealand because my friend Glenn, who's dead now, he worked at an advertising agency in New Zealand, and there used to be a bicycle company called Morrison's, and so I went out to New Zealand for the first time and did an ad, which I got a lot of money. For Hello John got a new Morrison's bicycle, and then the company went bust, I think, because of. But I felt very bad, because people, sometimes I pontificate about not doing commissions. People say, hey, well, I did one. Because it was that thing, where like Laurence Olivier, who had this like really fancy reputation in Britain, but in fact, he advertised like.
Yeah,
whiskey in Japan and stuff, and that's one of the things about.
You never did any in Japan or China, like a lot of. Celebrity?
No, that was the one time I did. It was.
You've done some voice.
Well, I was on the side of a bus
in Australia.
Australia,
yeah.
We talked about that, didn't we?
In the live show,
I was on the side of a bus. That was a photo campaign for something or other. But apart from that,
there was the 80s Toshiba advert, which used your song.
Yeah, but that wasn't me.
But that was, they just bought the rights to the song, and then it was sung by...
Ian Dury. Yeah.
The rhythm stick.
But I think it is, it's, I was a hypocrite to do it, but the only excuse would be nobody saw it really apart from in New Zealand. But I think if you appear in an ad, there's an element. I've done a lot of voiceovers because I think that's just work really. But I think if you appear in an ad, then you are endorsing the product. You are selling your soul really. But I am. So I did sell my soul, but only in New Zealand. But while we're talking about, and then the next time I went back to New Zealand was for Glenn's funeral. So
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But it's, I would love to go to New Zealand. Did you do all the New Zealandy stuff? Did you do like skydiving and climb a mountain?
No, none of that. No.
Drinking white wine and go to the Hobbit, Hobbiton.
That was before all that. I did nothing.
Well, Khalid emails us from New Zealand. And he speaks a bit of, I'm guessing, Maori in the email. He says, Aroha from Aotearoa to both of you.
Yes, that's the Maori word for New Zealand. The land of the long white cloud.
And Aroha sounds like Aloha, which is the Hawaiian.
Well, they are Polynesians, aren't they? The Maori are Polynesians.
All like distant cousins and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the Maori have only been on the island of New Zealand, I think, for 600 years themselves, really.
Oh.
I think, I don't know if I'm wrong, then I stand.
So what you're saying, Alexi, is that Maoris are colonizers themselves. Interesting.
Well, yeah, I think that's true. I think they did colonize. No judgment. I'm just, you know.
So Khalid says, this is the first time writing in because it takes that long for the words to fly over from New Zealand. Haha. I'll make this as short as possible. My daughter, Anya, had an essay to complete for her third year in law in Victoria Uni. When she explained what it was about, I pointed her to your latest podcast, R for Rojava. She's put in a whole section of the essence of the discussion in her essay, which she can share once it's been submitted, if we're interested. She's also discovered that even though she grew up as a socialist, from your podcast, Alexi, sorry, she has discovered that she's a Marxist. How did that? One of her lecturers refers to her as the resident Marxist, and she tells me that I'm also one. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. Love you both. Niga mihi, Khalid. That was some more Kiwi at the end there. So, but how did she discern from our podcast that she is a Marxist? Because you often say that you used to be a Marxist, but you're not anymore.
No,
right?
No.
You were a communist, but now you're a Marxist. Excuse me.
I was a communist. Yeah. So Marxism is the sacred text, really, and then all those people. You could like say the Bible is the sacred text, and then some people are like, you know, evangelicals that, you know, some people are very easygoing Christians, Protestants, some are Catholics, there's a multiplicity of sects, and so a multiplicity of interpretations of the sacred text, but nevertheless they all devolve from this one book or set of books. And the same is true of Marxism, really. So you can I am a flavor of Marxist. And communism is a Marxist sect, but it is one that I would reject these days.
And is Trotskyism or not?
Yes, also Marxist.
And then what else you've got?
Well, I think the left of the Labour Party, somebody like Jeremy Corbyn would have read Marx and would have absorbed some of his ideas, but wouldn't necessarily call himself Marxist, I think. But certainly, Weber, who I quote quite a lot in the when Sandwich Bar, and the founder of social democracy, he saw himself as an interpreter of the writings of Marx, for instance, and that's somebody who I think propounded a kind of it's very much the basis of a lot of our kind of parliamentary democracy of the 20th and 21st century, that Weber himself, I think, was a Marxist, or was very influenced by Marx. But you have to have read Marx to be a Marxist, to be honest, really. Although I suppose a lot of Christians haven't read the Bible, so.
She may have
I think to call yourself a Marxist, you have to have either read the sacred texts themselves, or you have had to read kind of commentary on the sacred texts, I suppose, that you would. You would, and those are what you would.
So, how do you feel that our podcast has been included in her third year?
I'm very thrilled.
Yes, Khalid, please send us the essay when it's available. Actually, I'd be interested in reading, especially the passage that we're mentioned in. And I hope we're cited properly and given credit.
Of course, it's quite difficult being a Marxist as well, because Marx himself changed his mind.
Yeah.
The young Marx and the old Marx,
Well, like B. Water, isn't it?
You know, when the young Marx loved, prog rock, then the elder Marx was much more into ragtime jazz. I don't know.
Wrote soundtracks for Toshiba adverts.
Yep.
Oh man, yeah, a bunch of emails about the bloody labor files from the Al Jazeera. Since the last time we've recorded an episode, so much shit has happened. Truss became prime minister, the Queen passed away. The labor files came out.
Yeah, you've roundly ignored by the mainstream.
Isn't
media,
that an absolute
unfucking believable? Yeah, we should maybe we'll edit out all the other shit we talked about and just it's actually done by a guy. It's three episodes made by a guy called Richard Sanders, who I had some discussions with about making a program, but it never came to fruition. But it is absolutely, if it was about some other party or, it's just explosive, the level of fucking jiggery pokery that went on in the Labour Party to sabotage Corbyn. I mean, it's breathtaking. It's online if you want to watch
it. It's all on the YouTube. It's just all straight up uploaded onto YouTube. And it's had so
And resolutely ignored by the fucking Guardian and the fucking media, because it tells a story that they don't want to, they were complicit in and they don't want to acknowledge, really, which was that, the accusations of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party were more or less entirely specious. And false.
Yeah.
And it was entirely a plot to, stop an anti-colonialist becoming prime minister of this country. And, it worked.
And at the same time, there was abhorrent racism against black and brown members of the Labour Party.
Yeah. Completely ignored by the BBC.
Selective over who can become members.
Language used
against black MPs and
there is a fair amount of stuff about this in Alexis Sellers' Imaginary Sandwich Bar starting on October. But funny with it, hilarious. It's not just because that's the gig. The stuff about the utter awfulness of the right wing, the Labour Party, but done in a hilarious fashion, which is why I.
So, yes, listener, we have watched that show. We're both appalled by its lack of representation in the wider media.
We could get Richard Sanders on. I'll get the guy who made it. I'll get him on next.
Fuck yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. All right. Yeah.
Yes, please. Make a note of that, please, Alexi.
All right. Alexi, make a note of that, please, Talal.
Okay.
Wilf, tell Talal to make a note of that, Alexi.
Fuck's sake. What's his name? Richard Sanders.
Richard Sanders, okay. I'll email him. Let's do that next. I know we it's a bit male. We understand that this being a bit male, the guests really, and I'm sorry about that. I did try and get Maxine Peake, but she's in Latvia filming until the end of November. But as soon as she gets back, we'll have her.
This is an email from Constantine. And I thought this one was interesting. He's replying to the episode on Rojava, but basically he says, I'm not what you may consider your core audience. I am as right-wing as can be without getting into populist territory, mainly on economics, defense, and small state, but very left-wing on immigration, abortion, gay issues, and culture. But let me say this. I may not let you run the country on my behalf, but I love listening to you and would share food with you anytime. Your voice, your tone, and even some of your ideas have been a source of great calmness and very educational on so many levels. Back in the late 70s, I used to throw stones at the American embassy in Athens as a youth member of the KKE, until one day I realized I was doing it whilst wearing Levi jeans and smoking Lucky Strikes, both smuggled out of the American base shop. And it kind of touches on what you were saying earlier, how the left and right are welcome to vote for the protest party, but we want this to be a welcome and safe space for any of
you. Yeah, and I think probably, I certainly don't subscribe to the whole bucket of ideas you're supposed to have when... your left wing. And again, actually, one of the episodes of Sandwich Bar is about that, about, you know, with that bit. I mean, I've used the podcast to some extent as a kind of a testing ground, but, you know, there was that episode we did where I was going to be Corbyn's Minister for Defence.
Yes.
And so that is an episode of Sandwich Bar, really. Obviously.
Oh, wow.
greatly slimmed down and funnied up. But you know, it's about how I don't, you know, I do love military. I am left wing, but I love military, you know. And it's important not to, I mean, that is one of the failings of the left, that there is this kind of package of ideas that you have to have, you know.
Oh, mate, yeah.
And it's wrong. So, yeah. So, Constantine, I salute you.
You slip up on one aspect and you're not left wing anymore. You're not.
Oh, that's another bit. Yeah. That's in Sandwich Bar as well. Yeah.
It's it is crazy. Yeah. So,
well, more emails.
Well, thanks, Constantine, and it's glad to hear a right wing person saying they feel educated by listening to this show. Rojava, this is from Walt. Well done. This is the future for all of us. He recommends a book called "The Dawn of Everything and a New History of Humanity" by David Graeber and David Wengrow. Gives a great analysis from an anthropologist and an archaeologist.
Somebody else was talking about this. Now, he's a terrible loss because he died like last year, David Graeber. I think,
Graeber died recently, but Wengrow would make an interesting guest, he says.
Oh, right. Yeah. And certainly, I mean, bullshit jobs and stuff. David Graeber is only somebody that I came to in the last couple of years. And I think he is a tragic loss because, again, he's a very original thinker, I think. And all right, maybe that guy then. Especially he's not a woman.
Yes, we are trying our best to get a woman on the show, but women just don't like us. I can't get one to speak to me. This is from Nate. The last two episodes with Phil Bevan and the Rojava episode were really great, with Khan Ross, the Rojava one. In the Bevan episode, he's asking about Bevan. Alexei very briefly talked about Trotsky and the crackdown on Kronstadt.
Mm-hmm.
He said that was the end of the emancipatory potential of the Russian Revolution.
Mm.
Something like that, but better put. He'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nate. Any thoughts on that?
You know, I am, as I often say, I am surfing on the very edges of my own knowledge when I talk about these things. But my understanding is that maybe 2 or 3 years after the revolution, so in 1921, the garrison, the sailors of the Soviet Navy at the base at Kronstadt rose up and demanded, they could see the way the revolution was going, that the kind of original kind of ideas of freedom and tolerance were already being subsumed by the Bolsheviks, and they demanded a return to the original ideals of the revolution. And it was Trotsky, as head of the Red Army, that led a detachment across the ice and crushed and suppressed that uprising, really. And that's all I really know. I should know more about it. It seemed to me that sort of marked, my feeling is that marked the kind of the death of the idealist period of the Soviet Revolution and the start of the descent into authoritarianism, which, you know, cumulated in Stalin. But I might be, I don't know. Inform me, people. I'm sure there's somebody out there who knows a lot more about this than I do.
Yes, certainly more than I do as well. When I'm editing, I'll listen more carefully to what you just said. I was actually reading other emails while you were talking. Sorry. I have nothing to add, but I hope that answered your question, Nate. I'm going to read you one more question, okay?
Right.
Yeah. About the Queen's funeral and accession of King Charles
the
Third.
Yes.
He was, this from Paul, he was thinking, what are your feelings about the protesters at the events around the ceremonial pomp surrounding the royals? Is arresting and charging protesters, holding blank pieces of paper, or expressing anti-monarchy sentiments the beginning of a fascist state? Or have we already been one since Johnson was prime minister? Thank you, Paul.
Well, several... I mean, there is some of this in Sandwich Bar. It's about that idea that occasionally it's usually centered around the royals, although there are other figures occasionally. that where there's a kind of collective madness which takes over for a week or two. Like I talk about the time when Diana died, and if you expressed opinions, anti-monarchist opinions in the week after Diana died, you would have got your head kicked. You know?
Yeah.
And then that kind of mood goes away and things become easier. There is nevertheless, I think that Priti Patel and now as Home Secretary Johnson, that this iteration of the Conservatives are, that they are definitely, they're not fascists, but they are
getting there.
They're getting there, yeah. The right to protest is being very much curtailed.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, that they want to criminalize or forbid councils boycotting Israel. They want to make, I think, the whole boycott, divestment, sanctions,
yeah,
an entirely non-violent protest movement. They want to make that illegal, I think, or very difficult to take part in. They want to make protest, demonstrations much more difficult.
Yeah.
And it is,
that's scary. Yeah. We can't let them get away with that shit. If they tell you not to protest, we have to protest more, because that is a fundamental basic human right. And it's just, it's fucking terrifying to even think that they might make that law, because that is just offensive.
I mean, I do remember, like, during the miners' strike, that there was roadblocks. I can remember getting, doing benefits to the miners and being stopped at roadblocks by the police and stuff. So it's not, in a sense, it's not, it's not new, but it's an ongoing, and I'm sure Starmer would do absolutely nothing to make that situation easier, to reverse any of that. Mm. But I think we are living in the particularly this iteration of the Tories is, and the Johnson iteration was, politically extremely right wing and authoritarian. And, that's the direction of travel at the moment, I think.
Too many laws. You know what we need, Alexei? We need this country to be a bit more like the Wild West. Less laws, more freedom.
Yeah. Did you ever see the series Deadwood? Did you watch that?
That's one of the greatest TV series. I didn't. I've heard, and I really should watch it. Yeah.
People should watch it. It's one of the greatest TV series of all time.
With Byrne.
It's Timothy Oliphant
Byrne.
I can't remember. It's Lovejoy. What's his name? Ian McShane.
Oh, Ian McShane. Yeah, not.
It's kind of, if there's any central character, and a lot of great women's parts as well.
10 grand for a Kazi Lovejoy.
10 grand, 20 grand for a Kazi Lovejoy. Yeah, my mate, Ian McShane. Well,
seems like we've gone long enough on this here podcast, Alexei.
I think so. I hope this is all right for people. Let us know if this is strayed too far outside the norms of decent broadcasting.
Promised them from the beginning this would be mosey loping, cattle roping.
And it has turned out to be that way. So.
Lily livered.
I think that's all right. You're out on your run or you're walking the dog.
Oh, I've had a grand time.
That's a good accent.
Got cattle to tend to, sir. So, gonna leave you to finish your whiskey on your own. See you at the next dawn.
Mm. All right. Adios, partner. I'll see you soon.
Yeah, clopping away. Back to the ranch.
Clop-a-tee-clop.
Sugarfoot, easy loping, cattle roping, Sugarfoot, carefree as the tumbleweeds, a jogging along with a heart full of song and a rifle and the volume of the law.
John got a new mouth, hello, John got a new mouth, I've got a brand new Morrison, a brand new 12-speed Morrison. It's my freeway on the highway, my freeway on the highway. It's terrific for me in traffic, it's terrific for me in traffic. Hello, John, got a new mouth, hello, John, got a new mouth, I bet you're right in there, I bet you're right in there.
Cos I'm riding free and easy. BMW, that's a nice name. Lancia, Mitsubishi, Rabbit, Alfa, Morrison, now that is a nice name. Morrison, I like the sound of that. What lines, what style, what magic, what sheer poetic imagery. Hello, John, got a new mouth, huh? Hello, John, got a new mouth, huh? Are you an airline pilot? Or you an airline pilot? I'm flying on my 12-speed, my lovely Morrison 12-speed. Your radiator's boiling, your radiator's boiling. It'll cost a fortune to fix it, it'll cost a fortune to fix it. Hello, John, got a new mouth, huh? Hello, John, got a new mouth, huh? Duranga, that's a nice name, but not as nice as Morrison. Cup of coffee. Ooh, a lot of cup of coffee. Yeah, cheers, that'd be nice. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Oh, look, here's a jogger. Oh, look, here comes a jogger. I like your three-piece tracks. I like your three-piece tracks. Well, don't you get a Morrison? It'll help you get a move on. Is there life in cars? Is there life in cars? Is there life on buses? Is there life on buses? Oh, I like their music centre. Got any Demis Roussos? Or Barry Manilow? Oh, like a whole week, I do, like a whole week. When I hear Barry Manilow, like a whole week. Hello, John, got a new mouth, huh? I've got a brand new Morrison. Hello, John, got a new mouth.